American Songbook on American Standards by the Sea. From Clooney to Crowell, Bennett, Buble, Basie, you're going to hear music that's hard to find anywhere else. Please join me, will you, for a couple of hours of great music here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's the Dick Robinson Show.
Every day, we make sure we get things done to keep ourselves on track, to live the way we want to live. And every day, we make choices, large and small, that reflect who we are, from the clothes we buy to the car we drive to where we choose to live. If you enjoy Jazz 90.1, make the choice to become a member. And once a year, renew that membership. See how it feels. It just might be one more small but important choice you make to live the way you want to with Jazz 90.1.
When you underwrite the programming of Jazz 90.1, you make your business known to people who enjoy jazz as much as you do. Your on-air message is short and tasteful, making it easy to remember, with basic information about your business, including how to reach you. Underwriting is economical, too. To find out more about underwriting Jazz 90.1, call 966-2660. That's 966-2660.
The Jazz 90.1 member card is more than just a card. It's our way of thanking you for supporting Jazz 90.1. Because in return, you can save money all year long by showing your Jazz 90.1 member card for discounts at local Jazz 90.1 member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bob Shop, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, Sound Source, Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates locations, Enright PC Management, Holland Music Studios, Cam's Pizzeria, excluding the Lyle Ave location, and Simply Crepes. Carry your Jazz 90.1 member card and show it when you shop. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card business, Christina Smith, licensed massage therapist with DermaSpa.
Jazz 90.1 is supported by our members and Agape Physical Therapy, with locations in Brockport, Chi-Lai, Gates, and Webster. Agape Physical Therapy offers customized exercise programs for those who suffer with arthritis, back, knee, and neck pain. Each of Agape Physical Therapy's four locations stresses a group approach to treatment and is staffed with a doctor of physical therapy or a McKenzie specialist to ensure the most effective therapy. For more information about Agape Physical Therapy, you may call 637-0790 or visit agapephysicaltherapy.com.
Support for Jazz 90.1 comes from our contributing members and by Sam's Club, with locations in Greece and Henrietta. More information at samsclub.com.
Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 2nd of January, Anno Domini 2010, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to the very first sound bites of the new decade. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be, go ahead, say your name.
And I'm Jim Tate.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, a couple of things to lose. I'm a little late getting myself organized here, but we'll get everybody started.
Should we get into the numerology about this is the 10th year of the first decade, not the first year of the next decade?
See, that's not the way it works. And I'll explain to you
how do we go, 2010 or 2000?
Is it 2010 or 2010?
2010 or 2010.
No, it'll be 2010 because we've already got a movie called 2012.
Well, there was a movie called 2010, too, with Roy Scheider.
Except that was
based on the book. That was 2010, yeah.
Listen, here's the way it works. With millennia, they started with year one.
Actually, right? They started with 1534, but counted backwards.
They started with year one. And so 2001 was the start of the next millennium. That's just the way it works because that's the way math works. If you don't like it, go someplace else because that's the way math works. On the other hand...
Did you say math or Mac?
Math.
Okay.
And Macs work that way too, I suspect.
You know, Macs could go the same weird way.
Macs are just what Macs are, and I don't think we should go there because Steve is already starting to turn red. So here's the other thing. Decades, on the other hand, because time is messy. The way we do time is messy and always has been. 24 hours, but 60 minutes and 60 seconds and yada, yada, yada. So the way it works is decades go from the aught to the nine. So although this is in fact the ninth year of the new decade, it is the first year of this of the ninth year of the new century. It is the first year of the second decade of the new century. And I don't care if you like it or not. That's just the way math and time work. Get over it.
I've learned more in the past 30 seconds.
Then you really cared to know.
I've learned more in the past 30 seconds than I learned my entire high school career.
There's actually a really neat new series on the Science Channel with Michio Kaku, who is a astrophysicist. I got to wait again?
Yeah.
Then I can't hear myself, so I got to turn myself up.
Yeah, he's doing it again.
He's a theoretical physicist and a science fiction fan, so he's been doing these series where he builds science fiction devices out of real-world theoretical physics. And this week they built a time machine based on gravity and speed. And they talked to an American astronaut who has 1,000 hours logged in space, and he is actually 1.5 milliseconds younger than the rest of us. Because he was traveling so fast, time was different for him than the rest of us on Earth.
Well, how nice is that?
Yeah. So they showed this giant whiteboard where they're calculating the math, and it came down to 1.5 nanoseconds, I think. Ridiculously tiny amount of time, but... it's
but
measurable.
Still, right. All right, let's start with our, let's finally start the show.
And we'll
start
is it time?
With our, it's time. We'll start with our first news item. In an historic public response to the U.S. Federal Communications Commission's request for comments regarding its forthcoming national broadcast plan due before Congress on February 17th, AT&T acknowledged not the forthcoming obsolescence, but the current obsolescence of the wire-lined telephone system. Without shame, it even applied the once degraded acronym POTS, plain old telephone system, interchangeably with PSTN, the public switch telephone network, which is what they prefer it to be called, apparently not anymore, to refer to the one-time marvel of technology that defined its predecessor, the Bell system, in the 20th century. But the new AT&T went a huge step further than to denigrate its stepchild. In its filing dated December 21st and released Tuesday, the company called upon the commission to begin consideration of a formal deadline for the transition of all wireline customers to a wireless system comprising broadband and IP connectivity, refraining from referring to 3G or 4G services in a cellular context. AT&T's reason? Carriers can no longer afford to maintain the old wired network while simultaneously building out the new wireless one. It is accordingly crucial that the commission pursue forward-looking regulatory policies that remove disincentives to private investment and encourage operators to extend broadband to... I'm not going to read all this because it's nonsense. Basically, what they're saying is it's a shift in investment from the legacy PSTN to newly deployed broadband infrastructure. What they're saying is the business model for legacy phone services is in a death spiral. The problem being basically that what's happening is people are leaving the wired phone system. But they have to keep the wired phone system in place for all the people who are still on it. And therefore, every line they keep running costs them more. Rather, they get less money for it. It's not like they're actually paying anything additional at this point. But if they have to upgrade it or whatever, they can't spread that cost over a larger number of people. So that's here's our question to you. What about you? Do you have a POTS line? If you do, why or why not? If you don't, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And, of course, we have a question for you, naturally, on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. The question is, do you still have a landline telephone? Your choices are, of course, heck no. Still thinking about it, which should be still thinking about getting rid of it. I'll never give it up. Never. And once you have made your choice there, I know you'll have something to say about this. So if you go underneath that, you will see a yellow box, and if you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And you'll be able to leave an opinion, as quite a number of people have already done so far. So please join us online and take a look at what happens at Ask Nick. Why not? Because after all, it's cool. That's all I have to say about that. All right, I'll tell you more. Basically, I do a newsletter. It's got rants and raves, tips and tricks, questions and answers, websites, and all kinds of other stuff. And if you're a member, you can actually search the old newsletters and the old questions and answers to solve your little problems. So it's pretty cool, and it's only $15 a year, and I can't imagine it. Why you wouldn't join. So join right now. Don't even wait. Don't wait. You can listen to the rest of this broadcast later. Join right now. All right.
No. No.
All
no,
right.
No.
Then in that case, come back and join us at soundbites.org and join us in the forums and see some pretty cool people. And we have Tay with us. We didn't even talk about Tay yet.
Yeah.
Before we get to the phones, we've got Duke waiting patiently or not. I don't really care. He's on the line anyway. And we'll get to him when we get to him. Tay is here from Second Life. He's actually in live today. Jim Tay is his real name. We know him as Tayville
159.
I don't really care. It's Tayville. It's Tayville. And you've seen him as a wizard or a dragon or some other weird little creature. And here he's pretty weird, but not little. It's not a little creature, but he is weird here. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
And he was apparently just wandering, found himself in Rye, woke up one morning, found himself in Rochester.
Yeah, I left all of Carolina on a small road trip and landed in Rochester. So I figured, you know, I'll hang around here for the show.
Why not? And we're glad to have you. We're glad to have you.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
And we're also glad to have you folks calling in at 966-5299 or toll, that's 966-JAZZ, or toll free 1-800-790-0415. Those are our numbers. Obviously, the Fibonacci numbers are 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, and 21. That's at least the start of it. But right now we have Duke on the line. Duke, where are you calling from?
From Greece.
And what's your question?
Well, I've picked up a Trojan horse on the computer. It's Vundo, V-U-N-D-O. And reading a little bit about it, it sounds... it's mostly pop-ups in that I'm getting and redirects and not letting me, like, let Google go through in that. But I don't know if this is something that that can be done at home, or do I need to bring the computer in, or what, you know, what are my options here?
All right, what we're finding out right now is, in fact, I've got a very good rant for later on, so you folks don't want to miss that one. But, yeah, there's a few of them out there right now that I've had a number of folks that we've gone ahead and cleaned out the machines, and they no sooner get home and get back on, they're infected. There's another one hiding that we've literally had to pull the hard drive to isolate it, and it is so bad. Unlike most of these viruses and Trojans out there, most of them have been very content just to be on one drive. This yeah. new one... it's spreading. It looked for any network drives. One of my machines got infected because it disseminated out to the, through my network. Of course, I did. You know, I've got pretty good security. It only got to one. That was it. And my machine warned me. So now what we're doing is literally pulling the hard drives out, taking this one machine. It's not even on the network. We'll first go ahead and get any updates that we need, get those updated, and then turn the machine, you know, shut it down, put this drive hooked up to it, and then go from there and clean it out. But, yeah, it's pretty nasty.
Yeah, I know it says it's in the registry, and, you know, it puts a decoy because my virus checker keeps finding it, cleaning it, but it's just a decoy.
No, they're getting pretty clever about it.
And once you do delete it, you also have to empty the recycle bin because if you don't do that, then it's still there and it still can infect you.
Okay.
But it's a long and involved process. Spy Sweeper can help get rid of it. I know that. But, man, it's a long and involved process. It involves renaming files and playing around at the command line and all of that stuff. So your best bet is to take it to somebody who, like Dave, who can remove the drive, clean it out fully, and bring your whole machine because it's going to be on all your drives.
Okay.
Right? So bring all your drives, bring your whole machine, let them take the drives out and clean them all off and put them back in. It's really, you know, it takes forever to do it yourself. It takes a long time for them to do it, but it's well worth the money because you know it's gone.
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, what kind of money are we talking with this? I mean, ballpark. I mean, you know, hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars?
No, not thousands.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
Pardon me?
Tens of thousands of dollars.
Tens of thousands.
Depends on how bad it's infected, maybe a couple hundred max.
And depending on how much stuff you have on your computer, the you know, the bottom line solution is erase it and start over.
Yeah.
That usually isn't necessary, but a lot of the big commercial tech companies talk you through doing that without telling you you're going to erase all your stuff. They just say put in the restore disks, and that'll clean the virus off. Yes, it will, and it will clean everything else off as well.
Right, you started like a brand new machine.
Maybe.
Now, I have a D drive. This has probably gone to the D drive also then, right, you're saying?
Yeah, a lot of the viruses will attack other drives in your computer. They'll hide in restore points, so you got to turn your restore off. They'll look on network drives in your network.
Well, and that's the reason I said maybe, because if you wipe out your machine and redo it, but it's moved to a network drive or a backup drive or something else, you can get reinfected in a second.
Yep.
Right. So if it's moved to that D drive, it could come right back then.
Right.
Yep. Well, I don't feel comfortable being in there messing around in the registry in that anyway. So. I guess I'm going to have to come see Dave.
I'm sorry, but yeah, you are.
Well, okay.
We've also seen some interesting, not really cross-platform viruses, but it's a virus that attacks network drives. And if you happen to have a Mac on your network that's sharing an SMB volume so your Windows users can see it, that network drive will get attacked by the virus, and the virus will install itself on that network drive. Can't do anything on the Mac because it's a Windows program, but then the next time you reconnect your PC, it could reinfect the PCs it's coming from, which is one of the reasons we like to recommend even Mac users should run an antivirus program of some sort in order to prevent themselves from being a carrier of Windows viruses.
Yeah, and that's also true of our Linux friends. Just because you don't run Windows doesn't mean you shouldn't have antivirus software running and be very careful what you do, because you don't want to infect those friends of yours who are still running Windows. All right, our next caller is Scott. Where are you calling from, Scott?
Calling from Buffalo. This is Bon Vibra.
Hello, Bon Vibra, how are you? We're getting all of Second Life in here today.
Yeah.
I'm your professional mathematician.
Yes, you are.
Let's start with zero, not one.
I apologize. That's probably true of all the sequences I actually... Well, no, the Fibonacci sequence doesn't start with zero.
Right.
Right.
It's intentional, right? It won't work if it started with zero.
Right, right. Then you end up with zero, 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 zero.
So, I'm actually calling with a time machine question.
There you go.
I posted it in the forums, but maybe I'll just talk right directly now. So my wife asked me to back up her. It tells me she's having trouble with her iMac, and we're getting time machine to work. And so I turned it on this morning. Nothing else was running. I just hooked up her backup hard drive by, it's a FireWire drive, and so sure enough, it said time machine failed. It couldn't, and I believe it was, it couldn't copy some folder.
Tell you what, stay on the line there.
Bonnie, stay on the line. We'll get back to you in just a second. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Jim Tay, Scott or Bon Vibra, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we have Jim Tay with us, and we have Bon Vibra on the line. Scott, I'm sorry we had to cut you off, but you time machine failed, and you couldn't. It said it couldn't copy a specific folder.
It said that it couldn't make. It could not make the. Well, just a second. I'm going to read what I wrote here. Oh yeah, it could not create a backup folder. The time machine failed while creating a backup folder.
Okay. It depends on why it couldn't create it. As Dave's playing with my mic in front of me. Sometimes if you go into the console log, you can see additional help information that will tell you more details about the error message. You said it has been working fine for a while?
It has been working fine for a while.
Could you have not have enough space?
Well, it should have told me that.
Yeah, and Time Machine will start deleting your oldest backup so you can put newer backups on it. Is it an external hard drive connected to that computer?
That's correct.
Okay. You can try.
It's a FireWire drive.
Mm-hmm. You can try running Disk Utility on it. And the first aid tab inside of Disk Utility, there's a repair permissions and a repair disk. It's possible that something has happened to the external backup drive, just like something could happen to the internal primary drive as well.
Oh.
But I would check the console in utilities and see if there's any more detailed messages in the console log.
Could it be insufficient writes?
Yeah, but why is the question? That's why running the repair permissions could be a fix.
All right, so I'll try that.
Yeah. Why it can't create the folder becomes sort of the first question, and then the next. Where you go from there, it depends on the answer to that question, whether it's a permission error or it's an I/O error or whatever.
All right.
Okay, so give Disk Utility a try, see what happens.
Tay, sorry. Do you want to say hi to Tay while you're? Oh, you know, I thought that today would be a quiet day.
Nah.
Being just after the first of the year, but we got them just coming out our ears right now today. Our next caller is Judy. Where are you calling from, Judy?
This is Judy from Hilton again.
Judy from Hilton, what's the question?
Hi there. I am trying to, I'm in my network connections thing, and I went over to view and toolbars, okay? And then it lists all your toolbars, and then you just click on them if you want them to appear. Well, I'm clicking on the Google toolbar and the MSN toolbar, and it doesn't take, and it won't put a little check mark by it or put it up or anything. What's wrong?
When you say you're in your network connections, and these toolbars are supposed to be in Internet Explorer?
Okay.
Your web browser?
Okay. I don't want to appear totally uneducated here.
It's entirely all right. I understand. But I think what you're actually looking at is the toolbars, they only appear in one of two places. One is right at the bottom of the screen.
Uh-huh.
And the other one, of course, is near the top of the screen. And if it's at the bottom of the screen, it's actually appearing in Windows. And if it's near the top of the screen, it's actually appearing inside Internet Explorer. So that they, when they normally appear, are they on the bottom or near the top?
Well, my whole line with my start menu and everything on there,
yeah,
that's on the top.
Oh, so does it appear on that line or down where it says file, edit, all of that stuff?
No, I have to go to my, my computer thing.
Okay. Then, then it's appearing on the actual...
See, I thought I wanted to sign up for MSN
sure.
to get me on to the internet.
Okay.
And I think I totally screwed it up. So now I took it off of MSN because there was no connection.
I love it. She's so technical.
I put it back on LAN, L-A-N.
Right.
All right. Now, usually there's a little check mark there that shows that that's your primary connection thing.
Right.
But I don't have a check mark there. So how do I get the check mark there?
Well, when you connect to the Internet, can you get on the Internet?
Yeah, so far, so good. But, like, if I was to sign off and come back tonight or something, I don't know if it's going to hold.
Well, that's, of course, the thing to try. But generally speaking, what you do is you open up from the start button to my computer to your network connections, which is where you are.
Yeah.
You don't want to do the toolbars. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about now. If
no,
you want to make sure you're
true.
Right. You want to make sure that your LAN connection is your default connection.
Right.
And in general, unless you have loaded some special software from MSN, in general, when your system detects that you have a LAN connection and there is no modem hooked up, it will automatically go onto the LAN network.
Okay. It says local area connection connected, and then it says firewalled.
Perfect.
And then it says Intel Pro.
Perfect.
Okay. But I don't know how to make that the primary one.
Well, what other ones do you have available?
Well, tell me what this is. This says 1394 connection.
Yeah, that's FireWire, and you don't have anything connected to it, so it'll never connect.
That's usually for a digital video camera.
Right.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, those are just extra connections that are on your machine, but it doesn't mean they're going to get you onto the network.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So you might see a U.S.
and firewalled, so.
Well, that's all right. That's interesting.
No, you can use IP over FireWire.
Mm-hmm.
So you could get on the Internet with FireWire, but you're probably not going
to. Yeah,
right.
No,
so
the computer
I don't
will.
Want to. I want to stay with LAN.
The computer will use. Well, LAN means Ethernet.
I thought I could connect with the Internet directly with MSN.
Well, what you do is you connect to the Internet automatically, and then you can make MSN your home page in your browser.
LAN actually means Ethernet. So if you're connected through Ethernet to a cable router or a DSL router.
If you've got like a little blue cable going into the back of your machine.
Yeah.
Right.
That's your network connection. If you don't have any other network connection, it will automatically pick that one because that's the only one there is.
Yeah, the other type of connection would be a dial-up connection if you're using a modem to dial into MSN.
I took care of that a long time ago.
Right. So I don't think you have anything to worry about, Judy, because if it's the only one you have, it's the only one it could possibly use.
Okay. See, okay. Now, how do I get that bar from the top of the screen to down at the bottom where it was once before?
Well, what you do is the start button bar, right?
Yeah.
What you do is you find an empty space on it.
Okay, I got it. I'm right at my computer, so this will
perfect. Click the mouse button and hold it down, and then drag the whole thing to
right
the
right or left.
The left mouse button. Click and hold.
Hold it.
Drag the whole thing down to the bottom of the screen, and magically the bar will jump to the bottom.
Or
your heart.
Yeah, or
there
either side
go.
Of yeah.
You could also
you
put it to the
calls like that, huh?
We get calls like that all the time. You could also put it to the side.
I'm teasing. Okay.
That also works for you Mac people, by the way.
Actually,
on my Mac, I have it off on the side because there's more sideways real estate than there is up and down.
Dillying around with it, and I was looking for that double arrow thing.
Yeah.
Never showed up. I said, oh, well, I'm stuck for life now.
This is, you got a whole new life now, Judy.
Okay.
Here's the thing. This is one of those things that makes me crazy about Windows, which is that it's one of the things that makes me crazy.
Yeah.
It's a different interface. You know, everything else, if you want to move something or whatever, you know, you do one of several ways. But you see an arrow, you see things change. This doesn't. It's just, you just got to know to grab and drag.
And somewhere along the way, you accidentally did that.
Yeah.
And that's how it got moved to the top.
Okay, that was going to be my other question. Yeah. How did it get up there in the
just
first place?
Accident. Yeah, it was, you were moving the mouse somewhere and kind of just accidentally did it. It happens to everybody. But now you know the secret of putting it back.
Oh, and Judy, you know
and
what else?
I asked once before about getting the description of the little icons on the desktop in black because they were only in white and I couldn't read them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It only works on the blue. If you change the color to silver or green.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you need to keep it on blue.
So that took care of that.
Excellent.
And the last thing is I have something here that says not connected in my
Well, that's probably one of your. That's probably that 1394 thing, which isn't connected to anything. You can ignore that.
Yeah.
If you can actually get on the internet, you can ignore the others.
And if I right-click it, it says connect, or it says about connection center.
Yeah, don't play with it.
Settings. Yeah,
don't play with it.
But you know one thing you got to do first, Judy?
I'll exit it.
There you go.
Okay, what's it?
You got to tell a friend. We've moved from a previous radio station. We're asking everybody if they would please tell at least two friends and have them tell a few folks that we're now over here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Judy.
Okay.
That was very sweet.
Yeah.
We like Judy. That's the kind of thing those little tricks that can make you just insane. And then you feel kind of dumb because it's such a simple thing. But if you don't know it, it's not simple at all. You know? It's just one of those hidden things.
Talking about things and how much you love about computers, I got to ask, how's Farmer Nick doing?
Farmer Nick is not farming. Nick is not farming. My wife, my daughter, and my sister-in-law are now living.
You had the straw hat on.
Yeah, and the straw in my teeth. My wife and my daughter and my sister-in-law are all on Farmville trading alien cows and golden chickens and all this other hoofraw and all this stuff. My ear. But it's silly. It's fun. You know what? My sister-in-law, my wife and my sister-in-law they haven't always been close because they were sisters together as children. But they've gotten close. Since my sister moved away, they've gotten very close. So,
Nick on a farm.
I'm kind of hoping she's not listening.
Yeah, you're going to get another call.
Yeah, exactly. No, she's actually at market today. For those of you who saw her at the public market today, we have the coffee stand, the Flower City Coffee at the public market.
They're doing this
together. No, she's not. Don't get me that. Don't get me started on that one. That's all on her. They do this thing together, and it's a way of togetherness. One of the things they do, and I got to tell you about this because it's so cool. For years, my wife has given my sister-in-law for Christmas a page-a-day calendar, you know, cartoons, usually The Far Side or something along that line. And she has one herself. So every morning, they will see the same cartoon together. And she's kind of cute.
Yeah.
Actually, it's kind of nice. So that's what they – so now the latest thing is Farmville, and they're chit-chatting back and forth on Facebook. And so if any of you are on Facebook – you might want to friend my wife so that she can grow her farm. God forbid she can't grow her farm anymore without more friends, apparently.
Well, or you can pay to buy, pay real money to buy.
No,
stuff. Shut
up.
Well, I had a few folks inquiring about how Farmer Nick was doing.
Yeah, Farmer Nick is not. There is no Farmer Nick. Let's squash that little.
Although you would look cute in bib overalls.
I do
look straw hat.
Cute in everything. Yeah. But I have worn bib. I have pictures of me on stage in bib overalls, as a matter of fact. But the point is, my wife and my daughter and my sister-in-law are all in Farmville. So if you want to friend my wife or my daughter and help them grow their farms, my wife would be thrilled and delighted for you to do that. So that'll be what she does. Our next caller, let's move off of Farmville and on to our next caller. Vic, where are you calling from, Vic?
Rondacoit.
Rondacoit, and how are things in lovely Rondacoit today?
Cold and snowy.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, don't forget, the days are getting longer.
Yes. Hey, on my wife's computer, she went to unplug her flash drive, and little icon in the system tray that you usually click on that says safely unplug it, it's not there.
Does
you just unplug it, or do you have to?
Does the volume show up in my computer? Maybe it's already been safely removed and not physically unplugged.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to look.
Yeah.
Right. So the thing to do is open up my computer and see if it's still listed there along with your C drive, your D drive, whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not there, then you can just pull it out.
And if it is there?
Right-click on it. Well, it depends on what version of Windows you're running. But you could right-click on it, and you may, in the drop-down list, also see safely remove or eject or remove this volume or any one of 100 different, because God forbid Microsoft does the same verbiage twice in a row, but it'll tell you something about removing the drive.
Okay, so you right click on the drive and the niche stuff should show up then, right?
Right.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Sounds simple enough. Thank you very much.
Good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. You must use that safely remove on Windows or the eject command on a Mac to eject a flash drive. Otherwise, you could risk damaging the directory.
The same is also true of Linux. All these machines, the USB drive gets mounted just like it was a hard drive. And when you mount any drive under any of these operating systems, it loads certain parts of that into memory. The indices, in general, get loaded into memory. And unless you flush them, write them back out to the drive, mm-hmm. then the index on the drive might be different from the index in memory and be wrong. So when you say safely eject, what you're really doing is flushing the buffers and writing those indices back out to make sure that that drive is whole before you remove it.
Which is why you'll often, if you do just physically unplug it, you'll get an error message about the drive being unmounted properly and may have damaged the directory, something like that.
And the next thing, I've seen people who pulled one and put in another one, and it looks exactly the same as the first one because the buffers are still the same.
Yep.
Those internal indices in memory didn't get flushed, and so it thinks that same drive got put back up in again. And when you do that, you're in for a world of hurt. That's a very bad thing.
I almost wish we didn't have removable drives because so many people crash their data and lose the stuff on the flash drive.
Right.
Or the operating system should handle it better.
Well, yes. And you can. You can generally set any of them internally through playing with the registry or whatever to say always, you know, immediate write anything to the drive. But that slows the system down so much that most people don't do it.
You know what really scares me, though, is a lot of folks, you know, because the jump drives have become so popular,
mm-hmm.
what really scares me is somebody will just put a jump drive in and not even bother scanning it. It's somebody else's drive. They're just popping into the machine. I'm telling you, right now, there is a Trojan going around that is jumping from one device to another. Machines, jump drives, everything else. Folks, get in the habit of scanning those jump drives before you even access the data.
Yep.
Because you might see just your files there, but there could be something behind the scenes on a hidden file on that jump drive you don't see that will jump over and be on your machine.
That's exactly right. And you want to be very careful of that. You want to be very careful. That's the reason years ago I actually started running Linux. People would send me an email with an attachment. Is this got a virus? Does this have a virus in it? Don't send it to me, for Pete's sake. Or they'd come in and say, I need you to help me. I can't get this file open.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd hand me a jump drive. Well, probably because there's a virus on it, and I don't want to put it in my machine. So I set up a Linux machine so that I could do all of that stuff, right? So I could look at the email. Originally, just did my email and jump drive stuff. And then I started using it more and more and more and more, and now I use it for everything because everything I do, now I don't worry about it anymore. I mean, I'm still running the antivirus because, like I said, I'm a good net citizen, but I don't worry about it as such. You know, so in fact, my wife wanted to download some stuff for old time radio. I've gotten her hooked on old time radio. I said, let me download it because we don't know these people. I downloaded it. It was clean. But the point was,
it wasn't one of your files.
Yeah, some of them were. Yes. What? Oh, is this the music for 30 seconds?
Yeah.
That was never 5 minutes just then. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. This is clearly we've still got rumball fallout going on here. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Jim Tay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Oh, Sid, if I ever got up on a Sunday morning at 7, I would join you, but ain't going to happen,
ain't
buddy.
Gonna.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, We are Soundbites. We were just talking to Jim here, and he's decided he'd rather come here every week because the real show happens in between these segments.
Absolutely. There's a lot of comedy that goes on here. A lot of comedy that goes on here. And,
yeah.
If I could figure out how to teleport up from South Carolina and just be here long enough for the show, not the snow or the cold,
yeah.
I'd be happy.
Well, we're having fun.
Well, that's the whole thing. I keep teasing him and our other friend, Wayoon.
Yep.
Oh, I can't send him enough snow pictures. That guy is hurting for certain. He wants snow in the worst way because he's got a four-wheel.
Where is he?
He's not far from Tay.
Well, I'll trade him. I've had enough snow now. It's after Christmas. It's snow pretty, can go right. away. I'm done with snow.
We had the pretty snow. Now it can all just go away.
That's exactly right.
I can't hear myself at all now.
I can hear you.
Yeah, you're coming across good.
All right, because I can't hear myself.
I can hear you.
And now if I turn my headset up, you guys are too loud.
No, I can hear you.
Yeah, you're good.
All right, here's our next news thing. Oh, this is going to keep coming back. Thank God. An Apple tablet PC in the new year is sounding increasingly likely. I really hope they bring one out just so I can stop reporting that there may be one.
There's a bunch of websites that are offering contests to guess the name. And
We already know what the name is going to be. Apple took out website called iSlate.
They've taken a lot of those. There's TouchPad. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah. Lee Kai-Fu, former president of Google Inc. Greater China, wrote in a December 28th post on his website that Apple is expecting to ship 10 million tablet computers in the first year of the device's release. Lee is currently the head of Innovation Works, a company funded in part by Foxconn Technology Group, which owns Hanhai Precision Industry, which supplies the Apple iPhone. Reportedly, Lee said he was told the 10 million tablets figure by a friend familiar with the project. Lee additionally wrote that Apple will release the device in January for less than $1,000, that it will feature a 10.1 multi-touch screen with 3G graphics, essentially looking like a giant iPhone. Speculation that Apple will produce a tablet PC in January, though the company has yet to confirm it is even working on one, increased on December 30th when the Financial Times reported that Apple had booked event space at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco for January 26th. On that date, it is expected that Apple CEO Steve Jobs will introduce the tablet, so we have less than a month to wait, thank heavens, which fans have been hoping for since Apple booked the Yerba Buena space back in September when it wound up introducing the new iPod Nano and a price reduction for the Apple TV. Rumors of an Apple tablet began sometime around 1530 when Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster wrote in a research note, "We expect Apple to fill the gap between the iPod Touch and the MacBook with a new tablet device, not a netbook, priced at about $500 to $700. While many speculate an Apple tablet could slow the runaway success of the netbook market, Munster added it could also overlap into the e-reader space. With a larger tablet device in Apple's lineup, the company could begin selling digital books in its iTunes store for use on the tablet as an e-book reader. Wouldn't that be interesting? In this way, Apple could respond to the tangential competition from Amazon's Kindle and Kindle DX and the Nook and, you know, whatever else is all coming down the line. The Kindle was Amazon's top-selling product during the 2009 season. So the question to you is, as we get closer, are you more excited by the thought of an Apple tablet, or does it just make you tired? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, if you want to call Avogadro, the number is 6.022. All right, our next caller. Now I'm going to get another call from Bonnie. Our next caller is John. Welcome, John. Where are you calling from?
Ontario, New York. And I have a Vista's Windows 7 upgrade, cautionary tale and question, I guess.
Uh-huh.
My daughter's laptop runs Vista Business, and we sent an email out because the student upgrade is only $39. And I figured, well, we can be done with Vista.
Right.
Because it's given her all kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yeah, okay, you can download it. So I downloaded it, burned the ISO, and started to install it, and it tells me, oh, sorry, you can't install 7 home premium over Vista Business.
Right,
right. You can only upgrade to the same level you're at on the new Windows 7. So if you have Vista Business, you must buy Vista Professional because they don't make a Vista Business.
Right. You can't downgrade if you're going to upgrade.
Okay. So I was hoping, you know, for $40 I could get away cheap with just doing an upgrade on that.
No, but the only way that's going to work, you'd have to wipe out the machine, install it brand new, make sure, of course, you've got all her stuff backed up twice.
Right.
And you're going to have to reinstall all the software.
That may not even work either, because if he has an upgrade key code, it's going to ask for the Windows version he's upgrading from.
That I have to wipe the machine and I can't upgrade. I have to do a full install.
Right.
And go on with it, which I was rather disappointed with that.
Sorry.
Well, yeah, they don't make it very clear on their upgrade page is that you can only upgrade to the same version you've already got. And,
right.
And so they
were $40.
Right. They were you might be able to return it or pay the difference to get the business upgrade.
Probably not, because it was a download.
Yeah.
So how are they going to ever know he actually...
For the student version, I don't know if they even offer the business upgrade.
I don't know. You'll have to ask.
Not at a discount, no.
Probably not.
You'll pay the retail price.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, like I said, cautionary tale for anybody else out there.
Yep. On the other hand, of course, Linux is free.
Yeah. They were technically...
Well, I got one of those boxes, too.
Yeah. There you go.
Cool. They were technically correct that you could download it.
Yes, you could. And you could spend $40 for that download, and now you've got your whole little ISO sitting on your hard drive. That's kind of nice, isn't it?
Yep.
Exactly. Well, and you can't necessarily blame them. They may not know. All right, our next caller is Bruce. Where are you calling from, Bruce?
Massillon.
Massillon, New York.
Yes.
Wow, what's your question?
Well, I have a couple if I can get them in. The first one is... my computer is about 6 years old, and I'm just wondering if I am able to upgrade to a newer monitor, like an LCD flat panel.
It depends entirely on your video card.
Right, which I have my manual here in front of me with my specs.
Oh, yes. Here's one of those.
Ooh. So, yeah, you're good.
Wow.
Yes. You have to match the specs of the video card, you know, 1024 by 768 at 60 hertz, with the specs of the monitor you buy, and they have to match exactly.
Okay.
So that's really all there is to it.
The short answer is yes. The long answer is it depends.
Yeah. Right. So basically,
it looks like I've got a whole list of resolutions that it supports or something like
right.
that.
Then what you need to do is pick one. Check to see how much memory is on that video card, because some of them... they only support the higher resolutions when you add more memory to the card. So read the manual very carefully to be sure of that, but then pick a monitor that matches one of those resolutions, and you should be good to go.
Or here's a better solution. How old is the machine?
Six.
All right, here's what you do.
Yeah.
All right, you ready?
You buy the new monitor and then say, oh, darn.
Get the 24-inch monitor. Now, you go ahead and try to go. If that doesn't work, it's, oh, darn, now I got to go out and get an i7 chip system with 4 gig of memory, a terabyte hard drive, a 1 gig video card, and I'm set to go.
Well, the thought did cross my mind.
Go for it. It's a new year. What the heck?
It is a 6-year-old computer, Bruce.
Right.
In car terms, that's a Model T.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, what you could have done is bought your new monitor last year, Friday or Thursday.
Yeah, last Thursday.
And then the new computer this year, and then you didn't buy a whole new system in 1 year. It was two separate years.
Well, see, here's the other thing that I've been telling folks, and maybe it helps explain it a little bit more, is, you know, I mean, folks get a system and say it's, like you, 6 years old. The operating system works great. But what changes it and makes it obsolete is, you know, all right, you bought this machine 6 years ago. Now, over the course of the years, say you've gotten this particular package to put on it, and then this one, and this one, and this one. And then each year they keep doing upgrades, which keeps raising the bar on what the system needs to run. Granted, your system worked fine with the original software, but the software is usually changing yearly because people want more features, they want it to do more, they want it to run faster, they want to do this, they do this. And that's what can make the machine actually go obsolete. It's not that it's really that bad of a machine or that old, it's just the software demands now are driving the upgrade market.
Yeah, well, so far for what I use it for, you know, it works fine, but I just was thinking I'd like
to... Yeah, have it as a second machine, backup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
But that does let you piecemeal upgrade your monitor now and then upgrade the computer a little later.
30-inch screen.
Well, see, that's the big problem.
Jeez, crackers, Dave. Not all of us are as rich as you are.
Well, it's not my money. I'm spending it.
That's true.
And that's
you're just hoping he spends it with you, so then you can afford that 30-inch monitor.
That's one of the
No way. I'd get such a text message. I'd be vibrating out of the studio.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Your wife would come down here with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
And that's one of the confusions when you look at buy a monitor is the screen resolution versus the size. You can get a 30-inch monitor that's 1024 by 768. It will look really crappy.
Well, actually, I have a friend who is visually impaired.
He might need a 30-inch.
And she has that. And it works fine for her. It's exactly what she needs.
And the other thing that a lot of people are doing now is HD televisions. What they call the true HD now at 1080 lines. 1080 lines is pretty good for a computer. The joke always used to be that televisions were much lower quality than computer monitors, mm-hmm. so we wanted to watch our TV shows on our computer. Well, now the TVs are catching up, so you can get a 1024 or a 1080 line television and get a nice 27-30-inch television and use that as your computer monitor and as your television and then cut down on the number of screens in your office.
So hopefully we've gotten you in enough trouble.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Hey, like time for one more.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
I have no problems helping people
AGB
spend money.
I'm sorry. You have to start again. What?
I have all the things you recommend, the AVG, the super anti-spyware, malware bytes, and all that. And I do the Security Tango. I never come up with anything, where it says I have anything to remove.
Good for you.
Does that mean I'm not getting anything? Could there be something lurking there that I'm not?
Well, as we always say, it's a game of leapfrog, right? New viruses come out, and then the antivirus fixes them, learns to detect them and fixes them, and then new viruses come out, and the antivirus gets updated and fixes them. So it's possible that at any point you'll be in the wrong end of that leapfrog. But generally speaking, if you continue to update and continue to run the Tango and continue to be virus-free or continue to not get anything, then you really are virus-free and you win.
Okay, well, good. All right. Well, thank you very much.
No problem.
Sorry. Guys. I was writing in my because I keep a log that you can go back and look at the log of all the questions, and I was writing in the log there for a moment.
And my wife was texting me saying, he didn't have to wait 2 minutes. You're right.
Yeah, I think she was right about me. If you got that 30-inch monitor, she'd be in here with a baseball bat.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what she meant by you got that right.
Yeah. But, she has no objection to me helping me spend other people's money.
No, exactly right. That's
if it has to come through our...
OPM, baby, that's the stuff.
Especially if it has to come through our shop and set it up, I might need it for a few months to really thoroughly test it out.
Or a year.
Could be.
Yeah, yeah.
I ordered
a machine at work, and because work paid for it, I got a quad processor, 8 gig of RAM, all this other stuff, and it didn't come. And he said, "Well, we're testing it." I said, "No, you're not testing it. You're playing with it. Get it in here now."
Yeah.
And I said, "We could leave all the games on it." Well, no. First, I didn't pay for those games, and B, I'm putting Linux on it, so no. But thank you anyway. It was very nice of you to offer.
Hey, they're just trying to look out for your best interest.
Yeah, exactly right. And everybody wants the hot, high-end, fancy super machine. And at work, I really have a need for that. I really, truly do. I'm running multiple virtual machines to test various thises and thats, and I can wipe them out and start them up again. And I need them all running fairly simultaneously because I'm doing a lot of stuff. And so I need a very fast machine with a lot of processors and all of that stuff. At home, I really, truly don't need – would I love to have that stuff? Absolutely. But I'm not going to spend my money on it because I don't need it. And, in fact, what we're seeing a lot of now with the Chrome OS, and I've got another one to talk about a little later, is people who are putting out just essentially the browser is the operating system. So if you're one of those people who spends their day in the browser and email and maybe a few documents of various sorts, you can use – Google Docs or Zoho or any, of those things, get all your documents online, Gmail or whatever to get your email online and do your browsing, and you can do it all in that browser, and you never have to leave the browser. So if you never have to leave the browser could be any browser, mm-hmm. and the underlying operating system doesn't even really have to exist. If you could find a way to just boot the browser.
Yeah.
And which is essentially what Google Chrome OS is trying to do.
And that's what a lot of the tablets doing this, and even cell phones. There are rumors that there are a lot of different tablets coming out, and some of the rumors are saying everyone's waiting to see what Apple's going to do so they can do it differently or cheaperly.
Nice.
These tablets are going to be basically a web browser, and you do all
this
your...
This segment brought to you by the number E.
Yeah. What is E? When we're talking about numbers, we did Fibonacci and Avogadro. What is E?
It equals MC squared. I know that much.
2.71828183.
Yeah, exactly.
So a lot of the rumors about different tablets are it's just going to be a web browser because we do most of our stuff on the web, email and watching videos and music. So it'll be a web browser with a music player and a video player. And that's what a lot of tablets that are even already in the market now are doing.
Well, and it's an interesting problem that Apple has. Because they've essentially, since they control their market, right, because they put out all the hardware, they have things at various price points. You can get a music player. You can get a music player with a bunch of apps. You can get a cell phone with a bunch of apps. You can get a laptop. You can get a desktop. You can get a set top, right? And they have those price points. Where do you fit the tablet? Is the tablet a big cell phone or a small laptop? Is it, you know, what is it? Where is it? What is the price point going to be? How do they position it without taking sales away from something else? I can envision, okay, a 10-inch screen that has a camera and a Bluetooth connection and is my video phone or my audio phone as well. I can carry it in my little bag. Make my phone calls through my Bluetooth, and I don't need an iPhone anymore. Is that good for Apple or bad for Apple?
Yeah.
Right?
It's going to be between the $400 iPod Touch and the $1,000 MacBook. We know,
well, exactly.
We know that.
But the point is, how do they position it? Is it an e-book reader? Is it a laptop? Is it the new iPhone? You know, honestly, they're going to have to cripple it one way or the other to not bump into to either end.
Right.
So which way are they going to cripple it? Are they not going to put a phone in it, or are they not going to make it powerful enough to run the kind of things people want to run on their notebooks?
Yeah, most of the rumors are leaning toward a big iPod Touch without an actual telephone radio in it or cell phone radio in it. But the iPod Touch can run Skype just fine and get on the internet that way.
If you've got Bluetooth and everything else.
Yeah.
Right. So it's going to be an interesting problem. And I don't know how I would answer that. I'd go for the whole Megillah. You know, I'd make it powerful enough to do everything because that's the kind of guy I am. I just like, I'm giving that one device. I want to read my books. I want to make my phone calls. I want to listen to my music. I want to get on the web. I want to do everything in that one device. But I can see that Apple would not want to cannibalize sales from either end for that. So we'll see what happens. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Jim Tay, me, Nick Francesco. See, now we've got a rhythm going. Steve Ray, Jim Tay, and all of you back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
From the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, I'm Rand Gardner with Healthcare 411. Information for better health. Spending time with your family over the holidays? Take the opportunity to get to know your family health history. By knowing if diabetes or cancer runs in your family, you and your doctor can talk about your health risks and recommended screenings. It's also good to include this information in a personal health record that you can create. ARC Director Dr. Carolyn Clancy.
A personal health record consists of all of your medical information kept in one place. A key component of personal health records would actually be an accurate family history. Family gatherings and other times when you're going to be seeing many members of your immediate and extended family would be a good time to be asking people about that information.
To help you create a family health history, go to familyhistory.hhs.gov. Healthcare 411 is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Seven-time All-Pro Daryl Green talks with kids about smoking.
What do you think you could tell someone who smokes that would make them quit?
They're hurting their friends. They're hurting everybody around them.
It's bad for you, and it costs a lot of money.
Every time they're smoking, they're polluting the air.
Because you're a special test.
Is there any better reason to quit? Be a champion and set a healthy example. And remember, it's never too late to quit.
For help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. Sit right there. I got to tell you something. I bet you know someone with type 2 diabetes. Guaranteed. You know why? Because one out of every three little kids is going to develop diabetes in their lifetime. Now, this can lead to heart problems, strokes, and even blindness. I'm John Sally, and I'm telling you, it ain't got to be that way. Now, you can up your defenses by eating more fruits and vegetables, having more vegetarian and vegan meals. These steps can be the power plays to protect you and your family against the risk of diabetes. To learn more, go to blockdiabetes.org.
The Jazz 90.1 member card is more than just a card. It's our way of thanking you for supporting Jazz 90.1. Because in return, you can save money all year long by showing your Jazz 90.1 member card for discounts at local Jazz 90.1 member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bob Shop, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, Sound Source, Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates Locations, Enright PC Management, Holland Music Studios, Cam's Pizzeria, excluding the Lyle Ave location, and Simply Crepes. Carry your Jazz 90.1 member card and show it when you shop. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card business, Christina Smith, licensed massage therapist with DermaSpa.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno, inviting you to a musical party this and every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. Our guests may include Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Bing Crosby, Rosemary Clooney, or who knows, maybe even Count Basie or Joe Williams, Bobby Darin. Lady Ella herself could stop by. It's a musical celebration every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. That's Sundays at 12 noon right here on Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported by our members and Agape Physical Therapy. Agape Physical Therapy offers aquatic therapy at their Brockport location, the Gates Chalet Hidden Valley Pool, and the Webster Aquatic Center. Using the Bradenco method of using water as physical therapy, Agape provides shallow and deep water exercise areas for partial and non-weight bearing activities. Agape Physical Therapy's experienced staff offers constant care in treating the young and the young at heart, non-athletes and athletes. For more information about Agape Physical Therapy, you may call 637-0790 or visit agapephysicaltherapy.com.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at, I don't know.
Hold on. Really hot.
3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We're having some technical difficulty with Steve's mic. You must be the only person who ever uses that mic.
Probably so. Why does it always have a problem?
Well, because it's got a problem, and we only notice it when you're
when I'm using it.
Because you're the
it's
guy.
It's just me. I'm special.
You're special, all right. Like sauce.
No, that was secret.
Special. Oh, I'm sorry. I was confused. I was just mildly confused. All righty then. Let's go to another. Oh, you know what? Let's dip into the mailbag, shall we?
That works.
We do accept mail at the Soundbites website. You can click on that and do it. Here's a question. Alan from Fairport wants to talk about Memtest having a false sense of security. I'm surprised none of the true computer builders have commented on Memtest 86. While it's an effective program for finding most common memory errors, I have found that it gives a false sense of security. A couple of years ago, I had a problem with one of my systems. one of those home-built AMD 3500 Plus type systems after getting the parts. And slapping it together, I was having no problems. After about six months, I started with the occasional blue screen of death and other odd problems, etc., etc. After running MemTest 86 for days without error, I started perusing there must be a software problem route. After all, the system had been running for a while and passed MemTest 86 without problems. Started noticing more than the usual problems when using QuickPar. I figured that program was the cause. Blah, 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 blah. Googling, blah, blah, blah. Prime 95, blah, blah, blah. Not overclocking. I'm trying to condense this. He seems to have written an entire thing here. But now he's talking about a program called Prime 95, which he thinks is better than MemTest 86. I will try it. I will try it, Alan. Thank you very much. We'll see what that's about.
Prime 95 looks like it tests the CPU.
Yeah.
It's an intensive CPU program. I use chess for that.
Right.
Tell the computer to play itself at chess, and it runs 100% of the CPU.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think they do, apparently they actually do two different things, but thank you anyway. Mm-hmm. That's very nice.
We looked at a hardware memory tester at the store once, because bad memory is a problem, and they're many thousands of dollars. I think the cheapest one refurbished was like $5,000.
Yep.
Mostly because there's dozens of different kinds of memory.
So you've got all kinds of different connectors.
Different connectors, different slots. Yeah, DDR1, DDR2, DDR3, SODIMM, full-size DIMM. So it's a very expensive box to do it in hardware. And one of the things with MemTest 86 and the memory testers on the Mac as well is run them. I got to go back farther. Mm-hmm. Run them overnight or 24 hours at least. You know, you can't just run it once and say it passed. You know, run it for a good 12 to 24 hours or more.
Yeah, yeah, and that's an important thing. What we find is that people often get impatient. You know, if you're having a problem with your memory, the reality is that you've got massive numbers of possible combinations of bits in that memory. And so you have to test all of them over and over and over again to find the one that's causing the weakness in the memory. And
that's
so it takes a long time.
That's not what my wife says.
Your memory's just gone. That's really all there is to that. Your memory is just simply completely gone. And we don't need to even think about your memory anymore.
What?
I'm sorry, were we talking? Look, squirrel. All right, here we go. This one's from George from Rochester, who writes, I would like to upgrade the guts of my computer, motherboard, processor, memory. I would like to also keep my two hard drives and all other peripherals. I've had some people tell me that I'll need to do a reformat of my drives and reinstall Windows and all my programs. Others have said that is not necessary, that I should be able to just move with some pre-move precautions and procedures the drives onto the new board. What are the odds of making the upgrade without having to do the reinstalls? Thank you.
No, it's not going to happen. Even because, excuse me, one, if he's upgrading, he's going to have a new hardware in there. And that's the one thing with Windows XP or even Windows Vista or Windows 7. It knows the hardware that it was installed with. So you're going to have to, you can do it. You can put those drive over, but what you're going to have to do is install Windows over Windows. So it will refine the actual hardware that is now in the system. Because I don't care even if they say, all right, we're going to send you the same motherboard. 10-1 odds, it's not even the same version. And what I mean by that, folks, is motherboards can have what they call versions. It can be version A, B, C, D, or whatever. And just from one version to the next is enough difference that Windows will detect it. But no biggie, you just got to turn around and, like I said, install Windows over Windows. And chances of, if this is an older machine, he's probably also looking at probably a new case. Because most of the newer motherboards also have what they call a 12-volt adapter that winds up going hooking up onto the motherboard too, along right next to the power cord part of it, or the power adapter. And you're going to need that also. So, and you're most likely going to want a little bit beefier hard drive with the drives and the fans nowadays. I love loading systems up with fans because, you know, it can never have it too cool in there. I've never found a system.
Well, and this is what I find interesting, is people will spend thousands of dollars for the hottest, fastest, and I mean hottest, mm-hmm. fastest, newest motherboard and video card and everything else, and then buy a $30 case for it with one fan in it. Well, you know what? That doesn't work anymore. You need, the more fans, the better.
Yep.
You need at least five fans to get air coming in and out in all the right places, one in each corner and on the one on each side and on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you really need to keep these machines and cool. And that also keeps them cool. Well, that's what I'm saying. One on each of the four sides, the front, back, mm-hmm. the two sides, yep. and on top. So that's five yep. fans right there. Not counting the power supply fan, so that's really six.
True.
So, and the reason for that is if you have all those fans, they all work together to move air, and in fact, that machine can be quieter than a machine with fewer fans, because each of those fans, first you get the whisper quiet fans to begin with, and then because you've got so many of them running, they don't need to run very hard in order to keep air moving.
Exactly.
So one of the things that you really need to remember is when you buy a machine, set aside enough money for a really good case. You just can't you can't throw that $30 case onto that $1,000, $1,500 motherboard mm-hmm. and $500 video card.
Yep, exactly.
You know, it's just not going to work. All right, let's go to another news item.
Okay.
Online retailer Amazon is testing Wall Street's patience by repeatedly touting the success of its Kindle electronic reader without providing specific sales figures. In one press release after another in recent months, Amazon has talked up the Kindle's best-selling status across all product categories. The statements have helped propel a share price already on a breathtaking rise due to Amazon's growing dominance in web retail. On the day after Christmas, the retailer said the Kindle was the most purchased gift in its history, and sales of its electronic books surpassed physical book sales on the holiday itself. Previously, Amazon said the device had its best monthly sales ever in December, with only half of the month gone by that point. In neither of those most recent examples did Amazon say how many Kindles or e-books were sold, nor by how much their sales actually rose. A spokes individual said Amazon does not disclose unit sales as a matter of company policy, but investor patience with the lack of details has begun to wear thin, particularly as Amazon shares hit an all-time high early in December on expectations that it would be one of the biggest winners in overall sales growth this last holiday season. That benefit of the doubt could be further tested in 2010 or 2010. Or 2010.
I
was waiting for you to correct.
2010?
No, you don't. No, nobody else likes that. You're the only one who likes that. As more readers enter the market and challenge the Kindle. As long as Amazon continues to have the right margins and the right profit numbers at the end of every quarter, they can probably get away with that, said James McIvey, an analyst at Forrester Research. But if the Kindle streak goes cold and Amazon continues to keep investors in the dark, they could turn on the stock. You may suffer a 10 to 15 to 20% correction because the uncertainty factor would be so high, McIvey said. It ensures that if there is bad news, people imagine the worst. Analysts at Bank of America Merrill Lynch also see Amazon treading a fine line with fuzzy statements on the Kindle. We continue to be frustrated with the limited unit data points from Amazon in their numerous Kindle press releases, the analysts wrote in a note cited by the Wall Street Journal this past week. These press releases seem aimed at generating press buzz, not providing the most relevant information to the street or to the press or to the investors. So all you ebook readers, which one do you own? If you don't own one, do you want one? That's one of the benefits, really, that the Kindle had for the longest time, was you could just buy books right through the Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nook now, if you take your Nook to Barnes & Noble, you can read any book in the place while you're sitting there.
Oh, cool.
Just like you can pull it off the shelf and sit and read it, you can read it there. Now, you leave and you can't read it anymore. But you can also buy from anywhere. Online with the Nook from Barnes & Noble, just like you can from the Kindle with Amazon. And so that's really been the secret of the success of the Kindle. Just like the iTunes Store has been the success for the iPod or the iPhone as an MP3 device, as a music playing device. And again, if the tablet does have e-reader capabilities, the ability to buy that book through iTunes, where, you know, 700 gazillion people already have a charge account, right? Yep. And it just becomes that much easier to do. It could be pretty useful, but you never know. You never know what is going to take people's fancy. A lot of, you know, Mac people don't read all those icons. So I don't know if they'll go ahead. Oh, and it doesn't even get a rise out of him.
No. Yeah, well, talking about the apps and all that, I found another good app, though, for the iTouch.
Oh, here we go.
Second Life.
For the iTouch?
Yep.
No way.
Yeah, you can get on there and see who else is on there, and you can literally go to different layers. You can't actually see like you do.
Right.
But you can get there, and you can IM folks in Second Life.
I'm doing that right now. I have, well, I'm not right at this moment, but I have the OMV Second Life Viewer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is essentially the same idea. It's a text-only viewer for a machine that doesn't have the graphics capability.
Yeah, you can see all your folks that are online that are in your friend list and your inventory and that type of stuff, but you can literally IM folks in Second Life.
How cool is that?
Can you make an enemies list?
What are you, the president?
Well, no, what they're going to do, supposedly there's version 2 of Second Life that's coming out in later in February. And they're going to have other features in it, supposedly.
Well, that'll be interesting to see. I have to say that we've been having fun Friday nights in Second Life. And we'll be back this Friday. We will be back this coming Friday. So okay. Those of you who have been waiting for the return of Soundbites in Second Life, it'll be the 8th. We'll be there together. Steve will be late because he's watching. What are they all back? Are all the TV shows back?
Yeah, they're coming back in January.
Okay, so you'll...
And we don't know exactly what they're airing at, but Caprica and Burn Notice and Stargate Atlantis Universe.
Stargate Universe.
Yeah.
Now, where do they go now? What's the next one going to be? We want to get Stargate Universe. What's it, we Stargate some other universe?
Yeah. Because we outgrew
Stargate Sidereal Reality.
We've outgrown our own galaxy, so now we're going through the universe. We got to find all the parallel universes.
Oh, I see. Stargate parallel alternate universe.
Alternate
one.
Dimensions.
Right.
It's an alternate dimension.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Gerd. Where are you calling from, Gerd?
I'm calling from Victor, New York.
Victor, and what can we do to make you happier?
Well, a lot, I guess. You were talking about the USB removal process.
Yeah.
What happens if you remove? I mean, the screen didn't say anything one way or another. I removed it, and my computer is shot. What's the procedure? I'll hang up, and I'll let you.
Well, don't hang up. We may have to ask you a couple of questions. When you say your computer is shot, what do you mean by that?
Well, you can't really do much of anything. I mean, you click on something, it just freezes. There's not much that actually works.
Have you danced a tango?
I can't even get that far. I can't even start it.
Well, that likely had nothing to do with the flash drive being removed improperly.
Probably not.
Yeah, usually right. That just could crash the flash drive. It shouldn't do anything to the rest of the computer.
The only thing that could have happened at that point is if in the process of removing it, you jumped a static spark.
I rather doubt that. I got a humidifier and air cleaner and all that kind of stuff.
That certainly would have done it. But if you, so when you go to boot it up, nothing happens?
Well, the arrow is there. You click on it and it just sits, does nothing.
So it does boot up. I mean, you get to your desktop.
Yes.
And you can't click on anything? Start button?
Correct.
Start your browser? Nothing?
Sounds like he's infected.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be an infection. But he can't clean it if he can't run anything.
Exactly. That's where we've had to, you know, folks say, well, matter of fact, they've had us, well, we'd like you to come over and just clean up our machines. One, I usually ask, what are they having for dinner?
Yeah, right. And for drinks afterwards and snacks before bedtime.
Yep. Yeah. And because, you know, it's easier just to bring it into the shop. I take the hard drive. I don't even try to boot it up. If it's not booting, I just take it out, put it on the machine after I've updated it, disconnect it from the internet, and run my stuff there. Because I just find it so much easier.
And if it's not infected, then you can still diagnose what's going on.
Oh, yeah. I do a check disk on the hard drive, too, just to make sure the structure of it is in, you know, the integrity of that is good.
Right. So if the thing isn't going to boot up at all, Gert, I'm afraid you are going to have to bring it in.
Okay.
You've got both Dave and Steve's shop. Steve's, I think, is a little closer to you if you're in Victor.
Yeah, he's on 251 right around the corner.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think I'll stop in Monday. What's a good time?
Anytime. We're open from 10 to 6.
Well, now, Gert.
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to drop it
off.
You're
going to drop it off and pick it up later. You're not going to sit around and wait.
No, sir. Yeah.
There you go. All right, there you are.
I listen to you every week, so I know the drill.
All right, excellent. Thanks, Gert.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, who's rocking out to the music. Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Tay had to leave, unfortunately, but we'll see him online Friday night. Back in just a couple of minutes with Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 20 minutes after the hour...
That was a long one.
Cheese and crackers. I barely had time to breathe.
I didn't even get to blow my nose.
I know it. But we're back. We don't mess around here. We are back. Another bit of Apple news, this one not so good. Apple appears to have blocked iPhone applications related to the Dalai Lama in its China App Store, making it the latest U.S. technology company to censor its services in China. Those apps, which appear in most countries' versions of the App Store, do not currently appear in the Chinese version. Another app related to Rabia Kadir, who, like the Dalai Lama, is an exiled minority leader reviled by China's authorities, is unavailable in the China App Store as well. The apparent censorship comes after carrier China Unicom launched the iPhone sales 2 months ago, making regulatory approval of the phone's contents in the country necessary for the first time. We continue to comply with local laws, Apple spokes individual Trudy Muller said in an email when asked about the missing apps. Not all apps are available in every country. At least 5 iPhone apps related to the Dalai Lama are unavailable in the China store. Some of these apps, named Dalai Quotes, Dalai Lama Quotes, and Dalai Lama Prayer Wheel, display inspirational quotes from the Tibetan spiritual leader. Another, Paging Dalai Lama, tells users where he is currently teaching. A 5th app, Nobel Laureates, contains information about Nobel Prize winners, including the Dalai Lama. Test searches done on 4 out of 5 iPhones displayed at the Apple Store in Beijing this month returned no results for the term Dalai. The apps also did not appear for searches done with a computer on iTunes after switching the country selection in the program to China. One of the iPhones at the Apple Store did display the Dalai Lama apps, though it was unclear as to why that actually is happening because none of the others did. China's officials condemned the Dalai Lama as a dangerous splitist, one who splits, seeking to separate Tibet from China, have called him a devil with a human face. The Dalai Lama fled Tibet in 1959 after Chinese troops crushed an uprising in the capital city of Lhasa, solidifying Chinese control there. The religious figure remains widely revered by Tibetans.
Apple's press release says that they comply with all local laws, so it's against the law in China to have anything about the Dalai Lama. So Apple could risk China cutting them off completely from the Chinese market and
double-edged sword.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So it becomes an interesting conundrum for Apple. Do they champion the cause of freedom or do they make their sales?
Right. And how many of the products are made in China?
Well, all of them, as a matter of fact. Yeah. So that's
so that's a double-edged sword for China because they don't want to lose all that business.
Well, right. But so that's an interesting question. So give us a call. Tell us how you fall in that spectrum. So what do you think? Give us a call. That's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And we'd be glad to, you know, we don't get too crazy on the air, but we'd like to know what you think about that. It's a tough question, and I don't know, you know, I can sit here all, you know, I grew up as a hippie, and I, you know, I can sit here and say, freedom for everybody, man. Don't bow to the man. But the reality is, if I were running a multi-billion-dollar company and a significant piece of my sales and all of the stuff that I sell comes from that country, what would I do?
Yeah.
You know, I get it. It's a tough choice. And I'm, you know, it's one of the reasons I'm not making it is because I don't know what I do. So who knows? Who knows?
Wait and see. One of those things, you know?
It's just one of those things. Just one of those fabulous things. One of those bells that... Okay. here we go. That now and then rings. All right. Let's go. Oh. God, I love this one. According to a newly surfaced filing, Microsoft is seeking patents on a method of controlling computers using electromyography, or EMG, a system that translates electrical activity from muscles into instructions for the computers. One of the filings suggests doing this by attaching sensors to a user's forearm, but another goes farther by proposing a completely wearable system of sensors on the head, chest, arm, and leg. Here's how one of the filings describes the overarching concept. Human-computer interactions have been primarily detected using direct manipulation of devices such as mice, keyboards, pens, dials, touch-sensitive surfaces. As computing and digital information becomes integrated into everyday environments, situations arise where it may be inconvenient or difficult to use hands to directly manipulate an input device. For example, a driver attempting to query a vehicle navigation system might find it helpful to be able to do so without removing his or her hands from the steering wheel. A person in a meeting may wish to unobtrusively interact with a computing device. Furthermore, I've been in meetings where I wish I could have unobtrusively just left the room. Furthermore, direct physical manipulation spreads microbes, so hands-free input mechanisms can be helpful. In areas sensitive to contamination, for example, surgery rooms. Blah blah blah. It goes on and on and on. They don't really talk much about the physically impaired, but that's okay, I suppose. One sensing technology, electromyography, EMG, measures electrical potentials generated by the activity of muscle cells. EMG-based systems may use sensors that are carefully placed according to detailed knowledge of the human physiology. Specific muscle activity is measured and used to infer movements intended or not. I'm not sure I would want my car controlled by involuntary muscle action.
Yeah, what happens if all of a sudden you get a Charlie horse or something?
Yeah, exactly,
or a
right.
Or in your eyes.
Right. So, you know what, you put that in a European sports car and all of a sudden it's all James Bondy. But controlling games and operating systems could be very real. Are you ready to try this on? And the off chance you're jumping at the possibility, don't hold your breath. Microsofties named in the filing are from the company's research unit, which suggests that this probably won't be on store shelves anytime soon. So our question is, after years of sitting at your computer, do you have any muscles left to control it with? Give us a call. That's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
You know, one of the other items that I kind of...
And, of course, the Lo Schmidt number 2.686. Sorry, go ahead.
No, one of the other things that didn't take off, which I really was hoping that would, was remember they had that coffee table that you could supposedly set a camera.
Yeah, the Microsoft Touch.
Surface.
Yeah.
They've been selling those to bars and entertainment facilities. I guess there's a lot of them in Vegas. But they're really, really expensive.
A lot of entertainment centers in Vegas? Yeah, I believe there are.
Yeah, quite a few. Yeah, they can be a little bit expensive, those Microsoft Surface.
$2,500?
What was interesting is it wasn't a touch surface. It had a bunch of cameras underneath that watched where you were doing it.
Right.
So it isn't as expensive as if it would have been a full touch surface.
Right.
Yeah, that looks so cool, and I was hoping it would have been something that you could have slowly come down in pricey.
Well, that whole concept of multi touch, we're seeing you can do it on the iPods and iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you'll be able to do it on the Apple tablet. You can do it on the Droid. And there's, any number of other devices you should be able to do that on. And so that whole idea of multi-touch eventually will have the whole NCIS, where you can, move things around on the screen or whatever. CSI.
The other thing that
my
backyard,
or wherever it is. Yeah.
The other thing that, we were talking about before, and I'm wondering how sales went, is that HP, remember they had the touch screen?
Yep.
Great if you're standing, like I am here at the board. But to be sitting there and have your arms up in the air constantly.
This has been, touch screens have been around for I can't tell you how long. And if they're upright, people don't want their arms in the air for hours at a time. People just don't do it. Unless you're a puppeteer and your arms are straight up, you're not going to have your arms up.
Or build some good arm muscles.
Right, and you're going to end up building some decent arm muscles. But we just said, people have been sitting at the computer for 20 years, don't have any muscles left at all.
But it makes for a really cool television.
It does make for a really cool television. All right.
Those monitors around.
Well, and that's the thing, We'll see. Our next caller is Steve. Where are you calling from, Steve?
Steve, I'm from Rochester. I was interested in your comments about the Dalai Lama in Tibet and China. And this is more political than technical. So
yeah, it is.
China.
Hello?
Oh, lost him. That was not us.
That was not us. We did not cut him off.
Nope. Did not.
And yes, I understand that there's a whole political thing, and that's kind of what we were talking about. Our question, of course, we don't do politics here in this show. I don't care. But the real question, you know, was, and it's just a conundrum that I would not be able to answer. If I were running Apple, what would be more important to me or to, you know, obviously you do things for the sales of the people who are, any corporation only has one customer, and that's the shareholder. Everything else is the product they bring to that customer. So I understand that they would, you know, that in order to maximize sales, you want to go wherever those sales happen to be. I get that. I do. It's just a terrible conundrum that I would not be able to handle. All right, Steve, I am sorry you got cut off. It really, truly wasn't us. Our next caller is Marty. Where are you calling from, Marty?
Shalott.
Shalott, New York.
Hey. Yeah.
The one without the R.
Yeah, I guess. I called you guys a couple of weeks ago asking about switching to Ubuntu.
Yep.
And a couple of days ago, I took the plunge.
Uh-huh.
Just wanted to let you know that so far, it's been a piece of cake.
Yep.
And I've really am encouraged by it. Now, the question of the day is, I went shopping for external CD, DVD drives, and, of course, you look on the box and it says for Windows.
Yep.
All right. What, you know, is there anything you can do about things like that, peripherals and stuff?
Yeah, there is. There's a hardware, what do they call it? Hardware compatibility list, HCL, for Ubuntu. And if you were to actually just, if you go to the Ubuntu wiki.
Yeah.
And if you, Steve will put it up on the list, but it's wiki.ubuntu.com/hardware support. Hardware support is all one word, and the H and the S are capitalized. But it actually leads you through a whole bunch of stuff. Lots of additional devices and input devices and multimedia devices and networking devices and output devices and all kinds of other things. You'd see a list of all of those things that are available, and they update that list pretty regularly.
So does that mean that those drivers are in Ubuntu somewhere?
Yes, exactly. If you buy something that's listed, you know, you go to the there's also the there's an external link in that page to the Linux USB device overview website.
Okay.
Which is way more of a name than you really want to hear. But what all of those do is they tell you not only what the device is, but how well it works and what the pitfalls may be. You know, for a lot of them, they'll just say, works like gangbusters, you know, and you're done.
Yeah.
And those are the ones you want to pick.
Yeah.
And it also tells you, you know, which, for example, let's say I wanted an HP digital camera. Right.
Yeah.
I go to there and it says, well, the HP PhotoSmart E317 works perfectly out of the box. Use the USB cable.
OK,
well, there you are. You know,
Let me poke around on that for a while.
There you go.
Hey, I really appreciate your encouragement. It's working out real well so far.
Well, I'm glad it has been. I'm very pleased to hear that. I like Linux a lot. And I think that, you know, I'm not saying everybody should dump whatever they've been doing immediately and go to it, although in the long run, you'd be a lot happier and we'd be out of work. But, you know, if it's your second machine or you're just looking to explore and have an adventure, and you'll find that you can use it every day for everything you want to do, and it works great.
Well, no, it's actually my Prime machine, but it got so infected I was going to have to bring it in somewhere. So I guess it did put you out of some work.
Hey, not me, just Dave and Steve.
Yeah. Right. Now all you got to do is tell a friend about Soundbites here on Member Supported Jazz 90.1 for us.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Have a good New Year.
You guys too.
Thanks, Marty.
Bye.
That's what we like to hear. Switching to Ubuntu, and it was a piece of cake.
Yeah.
I love to hear that. We're you know, and like I said, it's an adventure. It's something a little different. And a lot of people, you know, if you've got the time to play and you're sick and tired of the round robin antivirus pain in the patoot that Windows can
yeah,
be.
Yeah, I had another client in just this week. We moved stuff over from his old machine up to this new one that he got, and it's got Windows 7 on it, which he's very pleased to have. But he goes, well, now I'm going to try Ubuntu.
See?
He's been wanting to do it, and he goes, this machine should be okay for it. And I says, it'll be great. Had 2 gig of memory, had a 250 gig hard drive in it. I said, go for it. Have fun. He goes, that's just what I'm going to do. It's going to sit over next to this one. When I have the time in that, I'm going to play with it and learn that. I said, well, go for it. You know,
see, that's what keeps you young.
You know, and give us, you know, told him, give us a call on the show and let us know how you make up from time to time. And he says, you know, I'll do that.
Yep.
Cool.
Good for him. All right, another news item here. A federal appeals court on Wednesday upheld a lower court ruling that said Apple's iPod music player does not pose an unacceptable risk to users' hearing. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the 9th District affirmed a 2008 decision by a California district court to dismiss a long-running lawsuit that claimed iPods endangered users' hearings. I say endangered users' hearing! iPods, said the original 2006 lawsuit, which eventually boasted three plaintiffs and sought class action status, were defective because they could play music at unsafe volumes above 115 decibels. The district court disagreed, saying that any dangers of hearing loss from playing music too loud were obvious and unavoidable. The plaintiffs then appealed. Yesterday's appellate court ruling essentially repeated the arguments raised by the lower court. The district did not err, said Senior Circuit Judge David Thompson, who wrote the court's opinion. The plaintiffs admit that the iPod has an ordinary purpose of listening to music, and nothing they allege suggests iPods are unsafe for that use or defective. Their statements suggest only that users have the option of using an iPod in a risky manner, not that the product lacks any minimum level of quality. In other words, iPods do have safe levels of volume, and unless you're an idiot, you can avoid hearing loss by simply being a sensible human being. Additionally, said Thompson, the plaintiffs failed to prove injury had actually occurred. Yeah. The plaintiffs do not allege the iPods failed to do anything they were designed to do, nor do they allege that they or any others have suffered or are substantially certain to suffer inevitable hearing loss from other injury from iPod use. iPod sound volume has been of interest to others. Beyond these plaintiffs, last September, the European Commission ordered all makers of portable music players to add a default volume setting of around 80 decibels, as well as a health warning to all new devices within the next 2 years. Before that, the EU had set a minimum volume or a maximum volume, maximum volume limit of 100 decibels on all portable music players sold in its member countries. Apple already includes a warning with all iPods that reads in part, permanent hearing loss may occur if earphones or headphones are used at high volume. So what do you think? Should Apple be forced to compensate for a user's lack of basic common sense? Give us a call. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 and toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, no one's actually been hurt yet. That's not how lawsuits work. These guys were preemptively trying to sue for damage that may occur to maybe some people.
You know what's scary, though? And I've seen folks doing it. It's going down the road in their car with earbuds in both ears.
That's just stupid. And also illegal, oh, by the way.
You have to have a hands-free phone, but you can't cover both ears.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and you know what? I mean, I do. I admit it. If I go to my daughter's school, I hear kids who are walking past me. I can hear their music through their earbuds. Well, that's clearly too loud, particularly since I'm half deaf to begin with. If I can hear their music, it's too loud.
The iPod has a parental control feature where the parent can set a maximum volume and lock it down so the kid can't go beyond that.
Right. But how many people know that and how many parents know enough to do it?
Yeah.
You know, and the reality is, like I just said, I'm half deaf, and I didn't have an iPod when I was a kid. We just
played
bad
loud
ears.
No, yeah. We played loud music.
I didn't, though.
We had these giant cans when I was a kid.
That's right.
I remember the long days sitting down with an 8-track in my liner notes, just listening to an album.
I will admit, and I'm sure I'm going to get flack for this. I used to listen to Mozart. I used to listen to classical music.
Too many notes.
I like too many notes. Too many notes. And I used to listen to that stuff, and of course it wasn't terribly overly loud, and of course it wasn't. I didn't even have headphones half the time when I was listening. So that's not how I lost my hearing. I just have bad ears. Get over it. But, you know, I don't, you know, truly, I think it's about time we stood up and took a little responsibility for ourselves. If we're going to be stupid enough to blast our ears out, take responsibility and says, yep, I was stupid. Got it. That was me. All right, we're going to take a break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Member supported Jazz 90.1. We'll be right back.
Soundbites continues next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And apparently I'm covering up my little red light with my monitor here, so I couldn't see that I was already on the air. But you know what? It is time. It is absolutely way past time. We should have done this a while ago. So, kiddies, grab your footy jammies, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Wally Wacko.
Here we go.
You know, we've only had one odd call in our whole 20-year history, and you know the subject matter I'm talking about.
Oh, yes.
All right, so we won't even discuss it, and you other folks don't need to know. But
that was John, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was.
That was John Andrus.
Yeah. And it got through.
He wasn't the caller. He was the guy who didn't hit the dump button.
We're laughing so hard we forgot to hit the dump button.
But here's what we're talking about, folks. You know, you bring your machine in. We get it cleaned up. And then I get somebody calling me back, you know, a day or so later. You know what? I'm thoroughly disgusted with you. You've got to get this machine cleaned again. And blah, 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 blah. And, wait a minute. Bring it in. I'll take a look at it. Well, it's this gentleman who, let's say, loves his pinup art.
Pinup art. That's Vargas.
Right. Yes. And this is, and I mean, you know, some of
Vallejo.
The nose cone art from the from World War II.
Yes. All those.
It's classical, for Pete's sake.
But when you do generic searches, guess what? You will get other stuff. I'm sorry. He said, well, you got to find a way to block it. I said, very simple. There's two ways to block it. Well, what's that? I says, one, unplug your modem.
Yeah.
You won't get anything. Or number two, don't go to those sites.
Yep.
Hello? Well, I've gone to these before, you blah, blah. I said, yeah, and guess what? They're getting infected because along with the pinup art, they're putting in other art that you might not want. And this is what he was objecting to. Well, and it's infecting my machine. I says, yeah. They're trying to sell these other services, and that's what happens with these folks. They sit there to help subsidize it. They're getting this other art is the way I'll classify it.
Yeah.
And it's legal. You know, it's legit and everything else. But, you know, it's objectionable to quite a few folks. They don't want to see it on their screens. You know, they click on the site, and boom, it's opening up 20, 30 windows. Yeah, a lot of folks don't want to see it. I get that. Then don't search on that stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. My wife, and I have to tell this story on her, my wife got caught by a virus earlier this week. It took me 2.5 hours to clean it off. And what happened was, at that point, we thought one of Amelia's friends was coming over for New Year's Eve, and she is a Russian exchange student.
Oh.
So we stop it.
No, I've been inundated with junk mail in the last 2 weeks for Russian brides.
Well,
she
was
theme.
Looking up Russian New Year's Eve traditions, you know, to see if there was anything we could do that would be comfortable and homey for her.
Yeah.
Because we went back and looked. She said, this is the link I clicked on. It said Russian New Year's Eve traditions, and the page looked great. You click on it, and it's a site for Russian brides. And the simple fact that she opened it up, she got caught.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, these
You know what? My wife doesn't actually need a Russian bride. I just have to point that out to anybody who's thinking of sending her the links. She doesn't need one. We're good. I don't need one. We're good. But she was making a legitimate search to help out, you know, to be nice to this kid, and got caught. What are you going to do?
Yeah, but, you know, and same with this client of mine.
Did you find Happy Father's Frost to your Russian exchange student?
Sure, and that's because you're on a Mac. You don't care.
But, I mean, you know.
Really? She's a bride? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
But, the pinup art. I mean, back in World War II, you know, when they're putting it on the side planes, and that it was really attractive, you know, art.
Yep.
But, you know, like I say, you
and people collect it.
Yes. And I have no objection with that.
Right.
But don't blame me because you're also clicking on these other additional sites and getting reinfected again. That is not my problem, and I'm sorry. I cannot block it.
Yep.
Don't you guarantee your work? We guarantee it worked when it left the shop.
Yes.
We can't guarantee that you aren't going to find another one of those sites.
Yeah.
But what we did was we finished all our searches on my machine. So there... on my Linux box, so there was no question. There was no way we were going to get reinfected.
But, you know, these folks that want don't want to take blame or any, you know, ownership.
It's easy to do accidentally. You can be searching for something legitimate and get to a bad site.
As my wife was. And reinfect yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right, we're not blaming them. We're not saying that you went out and looked for this stuff.
No.
Stuff happens.
And that's what I try to tell folks. But, you know, automatically, you know, well, you got to make right by it. Wait a minute. You're already nailing me up against the wall, and I didn't do anything. I cleaned your machine. It left here clean.
You know, it's like if you get into a fender bender, and you go and get your bumper replaced. And as you leave the place, you skid on the ice and hit a telephone pole. Now your bumper's got to be replaced again. Do you blame the place that fixed your bumper the first time? No, it's clearly not their fault.
I think that's why a lot of states have been doing no-fault insurance. Doesn't matter who's at fault, your insurance company will pay for it.
Yeah, right. But that's my point. Yeah. Well, maybe people should be buying... nobody would make any money selling antivirus insurance.
Actually, I have seen fake ads.
You've seen fake ads. You've never seen a real ad because nobody would actually make money. Yeah. You know what, though? I'll sell you virus insurance for your Mac.
Yeah.
For your Mac or your Linux box.
Yep, and then write your first virus.
As long as you can prove that you didn't intentionally infect yourself.
Yep.
All right, that's it. We're going to put Uncle Dave back on the shelf. Put your hot cocoa mugs in the sink. Get out of your footy jammies. And we're done with Uncle Dave for another week.
Actually, on a related topic there, I read that the International Space Station celebrated Christmas twice. The American crew celebrated...
Second time for the West Coast, 2 hours later.
Yeah. Celebrated a traditional Christmas, Christian Christmas on the 25th, and then the Russian Orthodox Christmas. And now the same thing on New Year's. Russian Orthodox New Year's falls on January 13th and 14th. So, dasvidaniya to our...
So we could still have this girl over.
True, yeah.
Sure.
The primarily Russian crew aboard the space station now. And
I don't know any clean Russian. I could say things in Russian that would get us thrown off the air, but I can't. I don't know any clean Russian.
Let's not say we do, because I don't want to have to, you know, play the dump button.
Yeah. I just realized that. I know several phrases in Russian, none of which I can say on the air. Assuming it's true, of course.
Yeah, but let's not chance it.
Right. Of course, that's the problem with... learning a foreign phrase. You have no idea what you're actually saying to someone.
Mm-hmm. Or
it's like those people who get a tattoo. I always say to them, you know, they get like a Chinese ideogram, and I always say to them, "Do you actually know what that says?" And they invariably they go,
"Didn't know you like noodles that much."
They always go, "No, what?" Well, I don't know, but I'm saying, "Do you know? Do you actually know?"
And it's you're the tattoo artist is just snickering for a good time call. No, it doesn't mean peace and strength. Yeah.
Well, just like you were saying, you're Russian. You know, you could sit there and depending on how you accent certain words or anything else, I'm assuming, you know, the meanings could be.
Oh, I only know what I know. And I can swear in 8 or 9 languages, but I only speak. I'm an American, right? We don't actually learn foreign languages. We just shout louder and talk slower until you get it. It's one of the things that I truly regret. I'm at the point in my life where I can't learn a foreign language. I've truly tried. I'd love to learn a foreign language. I can't do it. And I have nothing but, you know, I have a friend of ours speaks very broken English. And I overheard somebody, you know, saying, geez, and crackers, and I'm a very bright person. And I said, well, you have to remember English is her 7th language.
Oops.
You know, yeah, she graduated from the Sorbonne, and French is her 5th language. She's just learning English. Give her some time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I did. It is the one shame in my life that I do not know any foreign languages. I have to apologize to everybody.
But we know how to swear in several foreign languages.
Yeah, I can swear in a lot of foreign languages. I don't know any. Apparently, I'm not motivated enough to learn any more. That's the thing. Matt's saying Rosetta Stone. Yeah, I should get a Rosetta Stone. That's ridiculous amounts of money for the Rosetta Stone software.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not cheap. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they're very proud of their system. Yes, they are.
Hmm.
Yes, they are. We were looking at it, and my daughter would like to learn French basically on her own. She just wants to learn it separately. Mm-hmm. So we looked into Rosetta Stone. I had to swallow a large lump in my throat when I saw the price.
They have a sale on now where you can save $125.
Yeah, imagine how much it costs if you can save $125. It's actually like a $700, $800 package. So we weren't going there. Yeah, we weren't going there. I'm sorry, we just weren't. So we bought her something that's...
You should hire one of those Russian brides to teach her Russian.
Probably be cheaper in the long
run. Probably, yeah.
7 billion rubles. That's $18. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, French is currently on sale for $539.
There you go. See that? On sale for $539.
Well, that's just 1, 2, and 3. If you want 1, 2, right. 3, 4, and 5, it's $700.
Right. So yeah. To get her the whole package was $700.
Normally $300 a piece, so that is a good sale.
Actually, I do know one clean phrase in French. Je veux parler avec la plume de ma tante, which apparently means may I please speak to the pen of my aunt.
Okay.
Ooh, here we go. Let's buy the American English version and see what it says.
Yeah. And I was wondering, though, if you buy lessons 1, 2, and 3, what does that get you through? First, a couple of phrases that you can at least say hello and get, you know.
Hello, please, thank you, where's the bathroom?
Yeah, and that's the first three lessons. If you want to learn the rest of the language, you got to pay the other $700 to get in lesson 4, 5, and 6.
I do have to say, I've lied. I do know Latin, but it's a dead language. It'd kill the Romans, and it's killing me.
Conjugate the verb, Romans go home, at sword point. And I'll write it 1,000 times
on the wall, and then the other Romans come around and see you doing it, and you have to run again. Exactly right. Yeah, it's my wife spent a year in France, and at the time I was a very poor actor, so I could only really talk to her for just a couple of minutes a month at, you know, $7 a minute.
Yeah.
So I would call her up and I would say, je veux parler avec Alain, s'il vous plaît, which means over the international phone line at the time, that sounded like, may I please speak to Elaine? And so mostly I would get, oui, and put the phone down and I'd listen to the Atlantic cable hum for a while they went and got her. Every once in a while, they would spout back French at me. They have to go, I don't know what you're saying. And they go, Américain. And they'd put the phone on. Then I'd be listening to this hum again while they went upstairs to get the lady upstairs who knew enough English to come down and say, Hélène, not here. Oh, I got that already. I did. I got that part. If she didn't come to the phone, there was no Elaine there. I get it. I've just spent $52 waiting for you to come and tell me she's not there.
But they want to be very polite.
It was very polite of them.
They worry about being polite and offending other folks.
Oh, Drock on the ICQ thing is offering to lend me his copy of Conversational Klingon. Now, Steve speaks Klingon.
Oh, sorry about the meter there, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just wiped me out. Whoa, pegged it big time.
I did used to speak Elvish. I did know Elvish. Back in my day, that was the language that got you dates.
Tolkien?
From Tolkien, yeah. Elbereth Gilthoniel Silivren Panamiriello Menelaglarelanath Canaded. Yeah, never mind. We don't have to go there. But yep.
The other great John Cleese translation is from A Fish Called Wanda.
Right.
That's a great John Cleese and his translation.
My daughter said yesterday, she was saying, now, you have to remember, if, in fact, the whole Middle Earth thing was really England, when the elves went to the West, they ended up in Canada.
No wonder they have a funny accent.
Exactly. I open up Gilthoniel, eh? All right, that's it. We're done for another. We're way past done for another week. I don't know where we were this week. I want to apologize to each and every one of you, just individually and collectively, for this entire show. Rob is sitting at home going, oh, my goodness, can we just get the polka guys to go another hour. All right. I want to thank everybody who called in. And first, let me just say, I hope that your new year is happy and blessed and safe and full of joy. Be well, be happy in this beautiful new decade. We will be back here next week, hopefully, unless Rob comes to his senses, with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. You have been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, right here on member-supported, the mighty, mighty Jazz 90.1. See you next week.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, celebrating 20...
Support for Jazz 90.1 comes from our contributing members and by Sam's Club, with locations in Greece and Henrietta. More information at samsclub.com. Here are the club calendar highlights for Saturday, January 1st, 2011. Ted Nicolosi and Cher Jeans play at Jasmine's Asian Fusion on Ridge Road in Webster tonight. That's at 7:30. Connie Deming is at the Little Theater Cafe on East Avenue from 8:30 till 10:30. Jazz Cafe at Monty's Corner on East Avenue perform at 8 o'clock tonight. You can catch Tommy Gravino at Thali of India on Winton Road. He plays from 7 o'clock till 9. And if you're looking for blues, the Brown Hound Bistro in Naples, New York hosts Bill Brown playing the blues tonight at 7 o'clock. Listen for club calendar highlights 4 times daily on Jazz 90.1. For more club calendar information, visit jazz901.org. For Jazz 90.1, I'm Joelle Van Buren.
Hi, this is Dick Robinson. Every Sunday from 10 to noon, you can hear the best of the Great American Songbook on American Standards by the Sea. From Clooney to Crowell, Bennett, Buble, Basie, you're going to hear music that's hard to find anywhere else. Please join me, will you, for a couple of hours of great music here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's the Dick Robinson Show.
I'm Julie Moyes. I had a healthy son named Ian who passed away from the flu only 30 hours after his first symptoms appeared. Now everyone 6 months and older should be vaccinated against the flu every year. Last year, the CDC estimated that more than 1,200 children died in the U.S. from the flu. The flu is serious. Get your family vaccinated. It's the best way to prevent the flu.
Visit familiesfightingflu.org to find flu vaccines in your area. A public service announcement from Families Fighting Flu.
Businesses benefit from underwriting Jazz 90.1.